is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
I herald his beginning. I herald your end. I herald
Galactus.
Galactus. You have to really, there's a long pause before
pregnant
Galactus.
Pause.
It's a Galactus, you know? It's this movie.
Julia Garner.
Julia Garner. And did you know Julia Garner right away? Like how long into the movie, into Fantastic Four First Steps, did you realize?
I feel like the cast was pretty much everywhere before this film.
Okay.
So I was pretty well versed in the cast and of it all. So yeah, Shalabala. Shalahalabala.
What
is that her name?
Saying?
That's her name because she's not.
Her name is the Silver Surfer.
No, this is a whole thing with the discourse because everyone's like, the Silver Surfer is a dude. And it's like, well, actually.
She's an alien Shalabal. From the utopian planet of Zenla who agreed to become Galactus' metallic skinned herald in exchange for him sparing her planet. She traveled through space on a space surfboard like craft in search of planets for.
Exactly.
Galactus to feed on.
What a job. That's honestly, I feel like that's been my role since joining the workforce in 2014 is just
heralding
the end planets? Of someone. So much bad news to carry, you know, just a peon in someone's larger scheme and ultimately feeling like, Is my head really in this game? Do I have skin in this? Do I want to contribute to this any longer? So hashtag relatable.
To the workforce. You're ready to, spoiler alert,
I'm gonna
throw yourself at your boss overlords. Into a giant
into
dimension.
A black hole.
Oh wait. You're Galactus? Who are you?
No, I'm the Silver Surfer.
Oh, okay.
But her whole storyline is that she... exactly.
Galactus,
corporate overlords
but now you're
are Galactus.
Kill them.
Exactly. Well, I didn't say kill for the record. FBI agent listening. There was no threat of murder. I'm just saying if I happen upon a black hole,
Louis
maybe
Shelby
someone will get...
Boy Mangionier.
Anyways. Fantastic Four.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the weird music in this.
Yeah, Michael Giacchino doing. No, wait, not Michael Giacchino. Yes.
Yes, Michael Giacchino of Lost fame, famously.
Yeah, he's really. You know what I think
it's
in a lot
memorable.
Of ways he phones it in, but yeah, I think this at least was unique. This was off type for him. You know, a little bit off brand.
This is a good way to
reflex.
Do a score. Just sort of put. Have people sing the title of the movie, you know? Like, Frickia Friday, Frickia Friday.
Eddington.
Eddington, best movie of the year, you said it.
No, I did not. Stop
okay, the Fantastic Four First Steps. We've been, how many more movies have we talked about at this point?
A lot.
This we've been waiting on for quite some time because Fantastic Four was one of the properties that was owned by Sony. And so the previous iterations of the Fantastic Four, both the Chris Evans version and the Michael B. Jordan version, were under Sony. And Disney got the rights to the Fantastic Four, I think at the same time when they got the rights to X-Men back. And so this has kind of been a long waiting process. There was a long time where there was a lot of speculation as to who would be the cast of this, who would be the Fantastic Four. And then they are being set up to be big figures in the upcoming sort of Avengers, a couple of movies that are coming up to round out phase 6 of this. This movie is in phase 5, I believe. Let me look up this just to make sure. I know our fans care deeply.
Yeah, we got to keep them on the straight, you know, really give them the true
phases info. These are in. No, this is the first movie of phase 6. Okay, this is phase 6. So
we made it.
We are entering the end game, not Avengers Endgame. we're in phase 6. The only movies left in this chunk in the multiverse saga are a new Spider-Man movie that will come out next summer, and then the two Avengers movies, which will come out December 2026 and December 2027. So after three Marvel movies this year, we are really like going to be chilling on the Marvel front for a bit.
Yeah, which is needed. I think we've reached the 7-year itch with Marvel where people just want out. It's a toxic relationship. It's run dry. It's kind of like, okay, there's glimmers of what once captured our hearts, but really we're all just a little dead inside and nothing's really as magical as it once was. And so I think we do deserve a break. I do. I think, you know, this has been a tough phase. Phase 4 and 5 or whatever. We've talked ad nauseum about it. No one likes it. There's too much happening. Thunderbolts was a nice little, oh, that's cute. That was fun. That was good. So I think there was a sense of hope with Fantastic Four and kind of bated breath to see how this, you know, pretty heavy hitter cast could carry this pretty familiar story and hopefully right the ship that is the MCU. I don't think it really succeeded, at least for me personally. I felt like this movie was pretty mid. Is that a hot take?
I don't think so. I'm like, what is it?
Yeah, how's it been doing?
It has an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm. But again, I feel like for a Marvel movie, that's typically where they are, unless it's bad. We have seen this some stinkers as of late. I think that this is sort of a return to form for Marvel of
I disagree.
Of the sort of middling Marvel movies that we seemingly got a bazillion of in the early days. I think this is better and more normal than the Marvels, Captain America, Brave New World, Thor, Love and Thunder, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. I think that the Ant-Man versus the Wasp, Quantumania, I think this is much more straightforward. It's a very kind of fine superhero movie. I don't necessarily think it's the most interesting or memorable of them, but it is it's not really trying to do that much weird stuff, and I think it succeeds largely in what it is attempting to do.
It
also is very much off on its own planet. It's literally in this weird universe that's the future, but the 60s, it's Jetsons kind of energy. Yeah. And that is clearly not the multiverse version of Earth that we're used to. So these worlds are going to have to collide in some way, shape, or form in the forthcoming Avengers movie. But because of that, it made this a little bit more like Shang-Chi, where it's a completely different story, or even Black Panther, I think, to a certain degree, where it's it does not have to contend with the larger Marvel universe, where something Captain America Brave New World or the Doctor Strange, it's you're pulling from all these different places. So
I get your point, and it's muddled waters now because there are so many characters floating around and interacting. So yeah, this was a standalone, but I don't know. There's just something so bland about it. So milk toast, if you will. It was I don't know. I don't know. I haven't I know I'm here to record my thoughts, but I haven't really sorted through my thoughts on the whole thing. I feel like I was remembering the first phase, or, you know, the first round of movies with like Iron Man and Thor and Captain America. And they all did a bunch of different stuff. And it wasn't like, oh, Marvel is just the funny thing, or, oh, Marvel always has some sort of heavy message at it. Like, it's not like I'm expecting this to fit in some neat trope, but it kind of felt like it held back on all fronts just to be as like unimpressive as possible. Like, it was like, it wasn't too funny, it wasn't too clever, it wasn't too like sharp, it wasn't too intentional with some sort of bigger message or through line or something. I don't know, it was just kind of like, yeah, fine. Like, I don't know, I was trying to work through it because I'm obviously more of a Marvel apologist than you are. And I'm also a huge Pedro Pascal stan, and also Ebon
Mossbacher. Right?
Mossbacher, great, love him, happy to see it. Vanessa Kirby, sure. Like, it's a stacked cast and I was excited about it, and I love sort of kitschy settings, so the whole Tomorrowland of it all was fun to me. But in action, it was just kind of like, okay, I think we just have run the superhero genre dry. Nothing will feel fresh again. Nothing will feel revolutionary again. And so everything just feels kind of beige. And to then make this whole story just about, I don't know, like family, it was just kind of a snooze for me.
Yeah, I did not love this movie by any means. And I don't like the fact that you're putting me in this position where now I have to be the one who's defending this Marvel
movie. You don't have to.
I mean, I don't, but I also don't necessarily, like...
You don't agree.
Well, I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it's just, I think it's just very much a straightforward superhero movie. I think that if we had got this in 2005 or whatever, before all of the other superhero movies, we would be like, oh, this is a really like interesting, cool movie. I think the problem is we've just seen so many superhero movies, specifically so many Marvel superhero movies in the past 10, 12 years or whatever. And I think we're just sort of exhausted by it. I mean, I think even something like Thunderbolts was sort of refreshing because it was so different and didn't really even feel like a superhero movie in some ways. And I think that Superman had a certain level of revitalization because it's a brand new thing. And this, I don't know. I think that we're kind of tired of these superhero movies. So even something that I think is fine, it's like, okay, we've seen this a ton. It's kind of like a Western, you know, like there used to be so many Westerns that are made and that were very straightforward, but now the world has seen so many Westerns that if you're going to make a Western, it's got to have, you know, it's got to be modern. It's got to do something different other than just be a straightforward Western, because those are kind of dull to us. And I think that that's the problem with superhero movies, is that they're trending more in the direction of kind of like action movies or like slashers, where yes, there is a dedicated audience, but we are sort of like used to all the tropes. And so now you really have to do something kind of cool or interesting in order to make us care about that. Otherwise, it's just some, you know, straight to DVD slasher movie where people are getting killed in cabins. And I think that's the problem with superhero movies, is like, I think that they're starting to transition to a place where we are tired of them, but I don't think that the studio or whoever has realized that that is happening yet. And so they're kind of giving us something that, again, 10 years ago, I think people would have been like, wow, this movie's great and amazing. And now it's kind of like, okay, this was like fine. It was whatever. Like, there's not things in this that I can really point to and be like, wow, I actively hate that. It was just kind of
forgettable. It's just formulaic. Yeah. It's just like, very like,
I loved the world. I thought that the like the set design and sort of the universe that it was built in was really, really interesting. I liked that this wasn't an origin story that we, not really, that, you know, they had kind of been famous for a bit and we're sort of getting the mid fame, even if we get these, you know, sort of first man-esque flashbacks every now and again. I liked the character dynamics. I thought that that worked well, and that.
But I think my problem became that it's
there
like,
just wasn't there just wasn't anything that was like there wasn't an oomph there. There was nothing to really like grab onto.
It was like, I think that's the problem we're gonna get as we continue to sort of rehash old IP. It's like they want to trust the audience that we already know. And so they don't need to like really dive into character or origin or whatever. And I like that, right? I don't need another origin story about them going to space and coming back with powers and wrestling with what those powers mean. But at the same time, when you're just trusting the audience to like already know something, then you're already kind of like, zoned out. Like, it's like, yeah, okay, these are the characters. They're trusting us to come in with our own like expectation of these characters, and so they don't really wrestle with these characters. Like, Reed is always going to be the straight-laced, nerdy overthinker, and the flame guy will always be sort of the flirty, non-committed womanizer type. And even if you don't get as sexist as you have in past iterations, like, okay, the rock guy is always going to be sad that nobody likes him as the rock guy. Like, it's like, it's just all like it's all just copy and pasted, but they're trying to say like, oh, well, we are respecting you as an audience to not like bother with characterization because you already know these characters. So like, let's just go with it. But then it just becomes kind of uninteresting because it's like, well, I could watch Chris Evans do this role. And yeah, it's a worse movie, but at least at the time it was trying something new. And whereas this is like, yeah, they have a cool set, but they don't really like do anything with it. Like, it's not like, I don't know, like everything would work in today's world of like everything would have worked in our Earth 400 or whatever Marvel set up as our reality. But it just so happened that they had cooler costumes for it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like all the tech was the same. They just didn't have cell phones.
Yeah, I mean, it's that thing. It's the, like, I can't remember what the word for it is, like retrofuturism or whatever, where like that Star Wars does, where it's like, okay, it's kind of like analog technology, but it's in the future. So like some of the things are more futuristic, but some of the things aren't, which I always think is interesting in world building. I love that they basically just lived in the UN building, which is a funny place for them to be.
Well, I mean, like one of the interesting things that I wish they'd focused on was this idea of Galactus at one point says like, you guys are infants or whatever. And I think that is interesting. Like, if you're playing in the multiverse or you have these ideas of different worlds evolving at different rates, and you have this world that thinks they're the future and that they've, you know, they've figured out time travel and flying through space and whatever intergalactic relations, I think there could have been like fun stuff to play with in this world that is both futuristic and kind of outdated from our perspective. And I'm not saying like even the movie needed to be concerned with bringing in some other world or some other entity to be like, what, you guys don't have the internet? Like, it's not that, but I just felt kind of like, yeah, everything was just kind of superficial and kind of like, even especially,
you were still just hoping for the Harry Styles can't. Like, you were like, where is that character? No. He has to come in and tell them their world is not.
No, like, that's the thing that's hard is I can't, like, criticize this without it sounding like I want something specific. But it's not that I, like, walked away thinking they should have done X, Y, Z. It's more that I was like, this movie made me feel absolutely nothing. And if anything, it just kind of bored me with how cliche it all became. Like, the sad rock guy, okay, you're just like talking to this woman, like grow a pair, like just figure it out instead of, I don't know, I just found them all so boring and like, oh, I'm the stupid youngest and no one takes me seriously, but I'm gonna get this I'm going to solve this language crisis on my own. And like the sister's like, good job. Good job, kid. I knew you could do it. And then she's like going, I don't know. Everything just felt kind of like, yeah, whatever.
I feel like you had like on episodes of Drag Race, sometimes queens will be safe and they'll be really upset that they're safe and that they did not win the challenge. Mm. And so they'll sort of have like meltdowns afterwards while there's people in there in the same room who are like actually up for elimination.
Yeah.
And somebody at some point was like, you sure have a lot of feelings for safe. And I feel like that is you right now, where I'm like, you sure have a lot of feelings about this movie for a movie that you were like, it was whatever. But also,
it's not rage. It's just conversation.
It's coming across a little rage filled.
I think it's because that there's no stopping this train, right? Like, studios will continue to make money off of these films. It's like how you did your $1 billion movie project, and it's like, wait, these are the things that are crossing the $1 billion mark? And it's like, ugh. Like, it's like, yeah, they're fine movies, but at the end of the day, it's like, oh my God, we're just going to keep getting these sort of watered down, fine, okay movies. And that's just kind of sad to me.
Well, the thing about $1 billion movies is that they have to do extremely well internationally.
I know.
And I feel like people in like other countries' film sort of setups don't have the same amount of money that they can invest in things. And so, yeah, if you live in like Mongolia or whatever, this and you're going not to movies,
relevant to my larger point.
No, I'm like that's why though. I mean, that's part of the.
But I'm saying like, okay, even in Hollywood, even in the U.S., even though Marvel's not doing great, like it's still going to churn out movies. You know, like it's not going anywhere. And I think this movie was sort of the like nail in the coffin of like, yeah, I don't think they'll ever be like, wow, that was different and fun and revolutionary and interesting. And instead, well, you know, they'll just be fine.
We could be the change we want to see in the world and just stop covering them.
Yeah. I mean, that's that? Honestly, I didn't push you. Like, this was just an inevitable decision made, but if you had been like, yeah, let's do something else, I wouldn't have fought you on this movie.
Well, the time I wanted to watch The Goldfinch, we're still hearing about that. So
that was a terrible decision, and I fought you correctly on that, and you'll never live it down. But if you had been like, do you think this movie's relevant, I would have been like, nah. Let's talk about The Summer I Turned Pretty instead.
I'm not watching The Summer I Turned Pretty. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not.
If you want to see real rage, though, you could have listened to me rant on that for an hour.
Do you not like The Summer I Turned Pretty?
Oh, no, it's very bad. It's very terrible.
Then why are you still watching it?
Oh, well, because why are you still watching And Just Like That? Like, what do you mean?
Because I like it. I like And Just Like That. I enjoy it. Speaking of And Just Like That, since we can't, you know, hear any more rageful.
I'm not rageful. Just because a woman raises her voice, Matthew, does not mean that the emotion is extreme.
Yes. But in this case, I'm feeling a lot of.
Maybe
feeling
my
a lot
rage
of,
is that you.
I'm an empath, you know. I'm
understanding me.
And women are just sort of hysterical beings, and that's what's going.
That's what this group of men, you know, wrote in their motherhood origin story.
Well, right, no, and that was sort of the part of the movie that I thought that you were going to get more upset about, because I was like, wait, this is something.
But it wasn't even interesting. Like, that's the thing is they didn't make it.
But wait. I want to do a side tangent first and talk about it just like that.
Please, God.
Because I feel like this is a really important moment where Carrie broke up with Aiden. This is the third time she's broken up with him across the series, but I don't think he's coming back. And I feel like finally now both of her like main love interests from the series are gone, and we're getting to see her like actually become a person separate of just wanting to be in a relationship. And I think that is a very interesting turn that the series is making that I am intrigued by. And
they just made her single to have more cameos, like more one-off dates, just like the original series.
Like, but no, because the whole series, I feel like, is about, oh, Carrie has to find love. Carrie has to find love. And she just ping-pongs back and forth between these two people. And I think astute watchers always enjoy the episodes best where Carrie is like just with her friends or she's focusing on her work and she's not focused on Big and Aiden. And now Big is dead and Aiden is gone. And so it's like, okay, we are finally for the first time in 9 seasons able to see Carrie just as Carrie, not through the lens of these two men who she's constantly going back and forth between, which I think is a very interesting place for her to be. And I'm excited to see where this
goes. But she's definitely going to date. Like, that's the whole setup.
She's going to date people. But I think that there's a difference between dating somebody in a like obsessive, oh, I need this person to like me kind of way, and dating in a healthy way. And I'm hoping that she's going to start dating in a healthier way of like, okay, I don't like need somebody to complete me. I'm just gonna like, you know, date for fun. And if something really works out, then great. But also I'm not gonna like follow around these terrible people just because I need somebody to be in my life.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Okay, Shelby, I can't let your Debbie Downer energy touch this.
I'm happy that you're the only person in the universe I've heard say anything positive about and just like that. Beyond like a hate watch or an indulgent sort of car crash.
I'm going to say this does not feel genuine to me. I don't think that you're actually happy surprised. For me. I think this is sarcasm.
I thought you were approaching the show with a sort of indulgence, like a sort of tongue-in-cheek, yeah, this is nonsense. But
I mean, yes, but I think it's getting better. Like, I think the first season was really bad, but I think it's moving in a good direction. And I think all of Sex and the City has to be, you know, looked at with that sort of mindset. Like, I don't think I watched the original series with like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, The Sopranos sort of. Like, it's always a little goofy. And I like the goofiness, but I also like the fact that I think the show tried to correct people in season one of And Just Like That, and the writers have sort of finally figured out a way to a place where they're moving these characters in a good direction.
This is just crazy to me because I've only seen think pieces about like how bonkers Charlotte's side stories are as like a slapstick sort of comedy, and then what's her face, the lawyer, being like the worst person on planet Earth, and then everyone's being like, why is Seema still talking about deodorant? Like, I don't know. I don't watch it, so I can't speak from a place of authority, but I am just like, the only other people I see talking about it are like, this show has only gotten worse and they're destroying the legacy of these characters. So I'm just,
this is the I'm thing, perplexed. Though, is that I don't think the characters ever had that much legacy. Like, I think
that's from your perspective coming into it as a man watching it in 2025.
No, exactly, which I think gives me a little bit more.
Oh dear Lord! Authority?
No. What I was going to say is that I think that this is somewhat similar to the Star Wars phenomenon, where you have all of these grown adults who watched Star Wars back in the 70s, and now they've lived in this obsession with Star Wars for 30 years, 50 years, however long it is. And so now there's like nothing that Star Wars can do that can live up to this, you know, hype of The Empire Strikes Back. And so all of this fan base does is spend their time dumping on every new Star Wars thing that comes out and not being able to enjoy it because they're comparing to this thing, the feelings that they had about this thing back 50 years ago when they were 15 and watching it. And I think it's the same thing with Sex and the City. The people who watched this when they were like, you know, 20 and moved to New York City and had this dream and drank Cosmopolitans and that, and then now are watching this series are like, they are destined to hate it. They hate every second of it. I don't think that I have that kind of attachment to it because I just watched the series for the first time last year. And having watched it all sort of in a row, like the first six seasons and then moving straight into And Just Like That, I don't think that the shows are that different from one another. Like Seema's whole plot line about how she doesn't like about how like her boyfriend likes her the way that she smells and doesn't want her to wear deodorant, but then if she doesn't wear deodorant she smells bad. Like that is exactly the same type of plot that they would have had in the original seasons. You know, like Charlotte was like hooking up with her rabbi like in one of the it's like the show has always been goofy and yeah. I think that people just like getting up on their high horses and you know being like Charlotte would never do this back in the day Charlotte blah blah blah, blah. It's like no, Charlotte was always like a goofy character who was on the side like and Samantha who is not in this like you know it's like when you're when a family member passes away and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, they were the greatest person who ever lived. Like, because Samantha is not on this, everybody can sort of say, well, Samantha wouldn't do this. Samantha was a better character. Samantha, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yes, Samantha was a great character, but also she also was goofy. Like, all of these characters were wacky in the original. It's a comedy.
Yeah, I think
they're
they
doing
know that.
Bizarre things. And they're continuing to do bizarre things. They're just doing bizarre things in the year of our Lord 2025 instead. And I think that there are some really, like, sweet moments and some really good character building, especially in seasons 2 and 3 of And Just Like That. And, yeah, I'm like, sorry that I did not think that the moment where Samantha was like super, super sweaty because she had cancer and was sweating through all of her clothes and then had to take her wig off and swing it around was like a seminal moment of life. I'm like, that is a weird, weird, weird scene. And yet, like, how come nobody's talking about that?
Well, it sounds like you need to write a think piece because your voice is being overshadowed.
Right, because the people who are writing all the think pieces are the people who are obsessed with Sex and the City for 30 years.
Yeah, so maybe that can be your next Parade article.
I mean, perhaps.
You need to find an angle, okay? Gay man watches And Just Like That for first time. Is it high art? Argue in the comments.
Gay man knows more about Sex and the City than all women.
Sex and the City culture more than anyone else alive.
Right. No, exactly. And so therefore, I would now like to pivot into talking about motherhood, another subject that I know a lot about. Shelby, as a woman who gave birth, do you think that you could give birth in outer space? And make it look as glamorous as Vanessa Kirby did.
You know, it happened fast. I'll say that. I was surprised. So it was like brought on by Galactus, right? That's the implication is he put his magic juice on her and she went into labor or something.
That's right? Why she...
Is it? Because they went to visit. It's like, okay, girl, you're in your 8th month or something. But sure, go on your space vacation. And then Galactus is like, wow, I sense something here. And he sort of like digitally, I don't know, he shines his light on her womb. And then suddenly she's like, the baby's coming. I was just surprised by the timing.
I thought it was just like movie timing of like, yeah. I didn't, because she was very pregnant. It wasn't like.
I know, but then he like did whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is she had birth in space.
Yes.
Yeah, it was happening.
Will fly.
You know, the whole like Galactus intro, that was where they put their money and it looked cool. And yeah, the character design, the like world eater spaceship was pretty cool. And then Silver Surfer Shabala going through the like, I don't know, riptide of space chasing them. That was cool. I had no problems with that visual. I think, but then, yeah, the story of like is our child normal? It was just kind of weird to me. It wasn't necessarily offensive. I didn't care about her speech. I just felt like the mechanics of it were so formulaic that I was like, yeah, of course this is how it's going to work out for her. She's has an angry mob, a rightfully angry mob at her doorstep, brought on because they couldn't keep their mouths shut. Like, who asked them to tell them what Galactus asked for? You know, like, they should have had a quick strategy sesh on the aircraft to be like, maybe we leave this one out, you know, like maybe we just don't mention this.
Okay, I have some hot takes about this situation. Okay, number one, I am sort of intrigued about Galactus's backstory more. I'm like,
yeah,
what is this dude? Was he always that big, or like,
no, because he said that... I used to be small like you, I used to be human like you, or whatever.
But then the eating just
Well, I don't think he got big. Like, I don't think he's like quote unquote fat. I think it's just he became this, you know, god, this weird entity of power, and that power craved, you know, had a hunger that demanded planets. Like, it wasn't like he started eating planets and thus he needed more planets. It was like he was somehow cursed to become giant and devour.
Yeah.
And I say all this knowing that there is indeed some sort of comic book that explains it all. I don't know it, though. That's my right. Oh, those yeah, are my no. context clues from the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah.
No, so I'm interested in that. But also, I think, okay, Galactus, he sends the Silver Surfer, and, you know, we get the famous line. Yeah, about
Galactus
how
Galactus is hungry, yeah.
Yes, Galactus is hungry, he's gonna eat you all, whatever. Then Fantastic Four goes to Galactus. Galactus is like,
whoa.
Yeah, is like, okay, I'm actually obsessed with your kid. Yeah. Like, give me your baby, and then I'll spare your planet.
Yeah, very.
And they are like,
Morgul of him. Yeah.
No, absolutely not. We will not be doing that. And I'm like, huh, okay.
It's the trolley problem, Matt.
To play devil's advocate here.
Okay, Mr. Reed.
How many, like, billion people on Earth?
Yeah, that's the whole central question of the film.
And we're making a sacrifice of one person. And the kid isn't even necessarily going to die. He just becomes the next Galactus, right? Like, they could still see each other. Like, it's not like the kid
dead. Devil's advocate. He will become the planet killer who then goes and kills other planets. So is it a moral choice to save your own skin but then reap harm on galaxies over, you know?
I mean, I guess the thing is, like, okay, well, yeah, if you want to end the cycle, you're going to have to kill Galactus. And so, great, like, perfect. I, like, love that idea. But at the same time, I'm like, maybe we could, you know, give the baby and then try to kill Galactus.
Wow.
You know,
well, Matt, did you not learn anything from the movie?
Here's the thing. I learned a lot of stuff from the Bible, which I read growing up, and not to be selfish and to lay down, you know, yourself for other people.
Yeah, so, but then also the dude trying to kill his son was offered a JK, I was kidding, exit plan, you know?
Look, I'm just saying, I am not quite sure that I would have made the same choice.
You would have been protesting. And I respect that. I think that would have been your right to protest. But I also think it is the parents' right to not give in to pressure, right? And Pedro Pascal has walked us through this very same problem earlier in his career in The Last of Us, where he ultimately is told, hey, we're going to kill Ellie, but she's going to stop this scourge of, you know, zombieism, and we'll be able to cure ourselves and save the planet. And he says, well, fuck that. That's my baby girl, and rescues her. So I think this is a very common conundrum in literature. And ultimately, yeah, I think that's the point, right? Reed is like, there is a logical answer here, which is one life matters less than a billion. But when that life matters more than your own, how can you be the one to make that decision? And so Sue's speech where she's like, I will not sacrifice my child for the world, but neither will I sacrifice the world for my child, is sort of the only answer you can give. And yeah, you wanted the lazy way out. You wanted the quick fix. You wanted, well, sure, let's just let the baby die or be turned into this monster that will go bother someone else. I want to save my own skin. And that is not very Christian of you. So
we also don't know if it's true that they're going to turn him into a plant eater. Maybe he'll be different, you know, like maybe right. He'll say, no, I'm not going to eat the planet.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of variables here that
I think the movie would have been more interesting if you were in it, for sure. If you were like the robot per se.
Again, I feel like this is not a genuine comment.
I'm saying like it was pretty easily fixed, this sort of tension, right? They set it up in the trailer, it's the act two mark is they come back and they're like, Galactus asked too high a price, he wants our baby. And immediately everyone else is like, well, follow-up question,
give him the baby.
So I think that is interesting. And they didn't really sit in it long because there was a very, 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 very low stakes protest happening outside their mansion, outside of their giant high tower, as it were. And Sue Storm makes the completely insane choice to walk out amongst it. And I was like, oh, this is going to turn into Mother and right. They're going to eat the baby. But no, she gives her little spiel.
No.
She gives her little spiel and everyone's like, yeah, girl, you're right. You're right, girl. Let's not kill the baby. And they go happily home. That was silly. I think the question itself is interesting. I think the tension there could have been
and of a good orator, you know.
Yeah.
You can really sway the crowd. She went out there with a little belly and gave her good speech and worked it out.
Yeah, she brought her infant out and is like, look at my cute baby. Would you really want me to throw this into space? And everyone's like, no, actually, our humanity is so simple. We will take this 2-minute spiel and change our entire fear-led perspective on my skin and my life and my
home. Maybe it's different. Maybe it's different in that universe.
Yeah, no, they're very, there's clearly no racism, no like sexism, no homophobia. It was idyllic. And they all worked together across the world to build these magical towers.
I know.
Without even questioning, should there be some sort of guard, some sort of protective element to protect these very important crucial towers. And that also became the headache for me. It was like, this was very clearly like a red herring. This was not going to work. But they spent a good chunk of the third part of the film like making us believe that they're gonna transfer the Earth through some sort of superpower. It doesn't. They count down and immediately Silver Surfer's like, LOL, boing, 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 boing.
Use one of the towers to send Galactus to it. So it's like,
that should have been their plan all along. It's easier to move one item than an entire world. Like that's physics. I think I didn't learn a lot of math, but I do feel like there's something about object.
You had to get him off the ship and you had to get him to come down there and stand.
But they very quickly knew he would come down. Their backup plan is, well, let's just put this baby in a carrier and he'll come marching through the city to get him.
I was like, that was actually the stupid plan. I'm like, Galactus himself had to come and fetch the baby. Like, there was no other mechanism to get the baby in space.
Silver Surfer was missing. Silver Surfer had taken a mental health break.
She said, sorry guys, she called I have in to sick.
And Galactus was like, ah, fine,
I'm having a mental
I'll come out here.
But she, yeah, so there was definitely some like plot holey kind of stuff. I don't know, the final sequence I was kind of whatever
it
about.
Was whatever it was so dumb that they take all this resource, all this time, all this global energy to get like 27 towers built in, I don't know, 12 days, whatever. Congrats to them. That's beautiful. I wish I lived on that planet. But then to have their backup plan be so inane, I was like, why are you taking the baby right now? Like, just play it a little riskier and keep the baby there for a minute longer. Because you have someone who can fly very fast. You have someone who can be invisible. So, like, she could have been on the platform with the baby, invisible. He could have stepped onto the platform and she could have zipped out of there with the baby in hold. But instead, they fly the baby, have an empty, not even like a fake organic baby. Reed couldn't cook up something in his oven to put in this baby carrier. And instead, they left it empty and thought they blinded the giant god. It was just like, for someone whose entire
perspective is like,
I am logical. There were a lot of poor choices made in that final, let's get the baby out of here. Because then why bring it back to all the way to their apartment? Like, why not? I don't know, like, you know, put him in a car next to you or something. Like, why leave him unattended with a robot who has literally no skills whatsoever?
Yes, fair enough.
You know.
But then at the end, Galactus is pushed into the wormhole by the Silver Surfer and does get sent into some other universe.
And the baby is magic.
Presumably Galactus will be coming back, I'm imagining.
Oh, really? Like,
I mean, I don't know, not dead and sent to another dimension. Like, I think it would be wild.
He has no ship.
Well, I think he can
and he needs a pretty big
ship.
How would he build another planet killer?
He's hungry. I don't know, Shelby.
He's just like floating in a black hole.
I don't know how he built the first one. But then Dr. Doom comes at the end. He's in the mid-credit scene hanging out with the baby.
And that's Robert
Downey Jr.'s new character, but I don't think this was so actually dumb. Him. I mean, maybe
of course not.
Things.
Yeah.
Or hear as a voice or anything.
But yeah, no, circling back to your original question, how did I feel about the motherhood of it all? Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really care about this baby or Sue and Reed as parents. I actually left during one of his talks to the baby where he's like, I built this machine to see if there's anything wrong with you, but you're perfect. That was my bathroom break scene. And so I don't know if there was anything more meaningful than that, but like, I just feel like as an ensemble, they weren't really allowed to like interact in interesting ways. Like, I think, not to say it needed to be funnier, but I think the friendship between the two bros was the best part, where they're like kind of talking and riffing with each other and they're on the outs of this couple and their new baby. And so anytime they were talking together, it was fun and interesting, and they had actual personalities. But Reed was surprisingly the wet blanket of the group. I think there's a way to play the straight guy without being so like dull. And I don't know if Pedro Pascal really nailed that here.
Yeah, I didn't really find him or Vanessa Kirby that. They were sort of like, we are parents. Our role is parent. My role is man. My role is woman.
Yeah.
The other two were definitely more interesting, but I felt like even the thing, like, I guess his relationship with Natasha Lyonne was sort of mildly interesting. What was going on there?
Absolutely nothing was going on there except bad green screen.
The Human Torch was the most interesting character here, and I think the most fun. And yeah, I wish that this had been a little bit more zany in their.
Yeah, it's not even like I'm like, make it as weird as Thor Ragnarok or make it funny. Like, it doesn't have to be Guardians funny. But I just feel like they were so like flat that it made it hard to believe that they're this like interesting family. And so that's why I was confused by all these reviews that were like, oh my God, Sue Storm is the heart of the Marvel universe going forward. Oh my God, the family dynamic, the world's first family. I was like, this is sleepy to me. I felt nothing, and that's it about this baby.
Yeah, I also was sort of like, okay, the family element was not speaking to me in the same way that the like depression element of Thunderbolts did,
or the family element. Like, that was a very powerful found family sort of like relationship.
Yes.
Like, this was just like, oops, we're married and we have a baby, so I guess we care about each other. Like, let's just trust the audience to like care for us without really putting any effort into it. I don't know.
Yeah, and it was all very sort of sterile in some ways, which I did not
love. Just like your most cliche heteronormative, like the dad is overthinking it, he's not as attached to the baby, the mother has some sort of mythical magical connection to this child, and I don't know, like it's like I wasn't necessarily like, yeah, whatever, it's written,
well,
by
dudes. Very written by four men, yeah, energy of what a family would look like. I'm like, yeah, oh, four men write a movie about a woman being a mom, like, okay, got
yeah
it.
Yeah, and it was like fine, right? Like the speeches she gave, the thoughts she had, like, yeah, that's parenthood, but it was just done in such a bland way that I was kind of like, I was just waiting for the yes and of it. But even the ending, even the secret ending where she's like, she's just so non-reactive in some ways that I find kind of,
I also didn't like weird. Her American accent. I don't think that helped her either.
Yeah, maybe that was it. It was just like, There was something really I don't know. Like, it was like, even when she was meant to react, like even when Galactus is like, I want your baby, or Dr. Doom is suddenly like playing peekaboo with your child, she was just like staring. And everyone was just like staring. There was no real oomph whenever anything happened.
Okay, I've gotta go here.
Except for Shalabala, I did like her.
She was great. Overall, this movie,
though, interesting too that she had to be a mother as well. Obviously, that's probably in the comics, blah blah blah. But like, to have these two women characters and their whole purpose comes from being a sacrificial mom.
Well, it's a movie about motherhood.
A sacrificial mom is just
what
like,
else
yeah,
can
okay.
a mom do but sacrifice? And you like,
did
cook?
You see We Live in Time with Florence Pugh?
Yes, we did a whole episode on it.
I couldn't remember, but like I thought that was
it's
really
a cancer movie. Remember, I
yeah,
had
yeah, yeah.
cancer.
You're right.
We
you're right.
About
the
all
cancer.
The cancer.
I knew I saw it. I knew. I just couldn't remember if you saw it. I'm sorry, but no. Yeah, I just think about like the depth of that. Woman,
how quick people
mother,
are forgetting
female
that I
relationship.
Nearly died last year.
I it's don't like think you, that has
you,
to do with
you take me
I remember
for
you.
But the whole movie's about her having cancer. It's a
I
cancer
know.
Movie.
I know it's a cancer movie. I'm saying that the way they portrayed her facing her loss and being like,
oh, yes,
I don't want to just be a mother or whatever was a really interesting dynamic
well,
to bring
so
to that.
Good.
Whereas, and that was, I believe, written by men. But
yes.
I think this was just so like, okay, it's a mom. Well, yeah, Shalabala sacrificed herself. That's why we can get to her now, because she feels guilty, blah, blah, blah. Oh, everyone else is babies. Oh, I am too, mm-hmm. the child of a mother and the son of a daughter. And it's just like, okay, like, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's all been, it's just hard. It's hard when the formula is repeated so often, like year after year, we get three of these movies. And so they're all going to start to become tropes of each other. And on top of that, like Fantastic Four, when did the Miles Teller one come out? Like it wasn't good, but it was recent. And so it's
like
not like
2015 or something.
Like yeah. It's not like relaunching some sort of lost buried IP. Like, so it's just all already in our heads. We just have so much baggage tied up with these films at this point that it's kind of like nothing will ever feel fresh because it's like we're carrying so much.
But you know what does feel fresh?
And just like that.
And just like that. It's fresh. It's like it's just so well done. And
you never know what's gonna happen next.
Right. It's like, and also a pro deodorant show, which I do appreciate. Like, yeah, we gotta be just wearing deodorant, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And representation for what is it? What does Charlotte suffer from? That makes her
vertigo?
Faint a lot. Oh yeah, vertigo.
She has vertigo. Yes, vertigo. Which is a real thing. Let's
and,
put some respect on vertigo's
yeah.
name.
And lesbians. Do they appreciate the? You know what I have been watching though. Speaking of, what's
Should
her name?
Have to go.
Okay.
Go.
Wait. But I've been watching The Gilded Age, which stars.
Yes.
Harley Quinn and what is
yes.
her name? Cynthia Nixon.
Yes.
And it's. Have you watched it?
No,
I need to find someone who watches it. It's like not good, but it's also not bad. So maybe that's just how I'm reacting to media these days. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe this is all saying something more about you than
probably.
About shows.
Probably, I'm dead inside, mm-hmm. and these little like, oh, we can't sacrifice a child. It's just not doing it for me anymore.
You should have been pro sacrificing the child if you're so dead inside. Okay, anyways.
No.
Next week we will be back, theoretically. I don't have internet in my apartment through August 12th, so we'll see how that goes.
What's coming up? What is it?
The Naked Gun.
No, absolutely not.
Which is funny.
No.
It's funny.
No.
I saw it. No. It's funny.
No.
The other option is Together. The
oh my God.
The Dave Franco Alison Brie horror movie. So I will let you sit with that. I am going to leave. Thank everybody for listening. As Shabba Bala said,
we're all gonna die, so might as well die with the ones you love.
Sure. I don't remember that scene exactly.
That's what she says, right? She's like, I herald your doom, but okay, now okay, you can be go. With I the ones to, you love.
We have to go. End of podcast. Goodbye.
Okay.